Okay, so my mother is in the process of selling our cottage. So I've been going through some of the things up there in order to see what to keep. And there's some nostalgia in that. My dad built the place more than 30 years ago, and I helped a bit. So there are a lot of memories tied up there, and for me, it's when I go through my dad's tools, and well, tools that I've gotten too, over the years that are up there, that's when I get sentimental. Some of those tools I identify so strongly with my father. You know, saws, for instance, because I remember him teaching me how to use a handsaw. I remember them standing there behind me, you know, his shadow casting down over the piece of wood that he was holding with me, and him guiding my hand as I tried to line up the blade of the saw with the pencil line we drew on the 2x4 or whatever it was we were cutting. And him telling me, you know, to use long strokes and pull back straight and things like that. And I know that this sort of mentoring that my dad did with me meant that at a certain point he'd just watch me while I did it. And then he'd just leave me on my own to do it. And then, you know, and then at some point we moved on to power saws and chainsaws and all those types of things. And the process started over again until he could leave me on my own with whatever type of saw we needed for the job to make the cuts, and he was doing something else on the project. And I also remember, you know, I also remember him getting mad at me sometimes because, you know, I'd cut something at the wrong angle and it didn't line up properly. You know, he'd always say, you know, measure twice, cut once. He'd say that. He didn't live by it, but he would say that, you know, and so he'd go back to the saw with me and he'd help me correct the mistake. And yeah, we had lots of arguments while we built stuff, that's for sure. And at a certain point, I realized that my dad didn't have all the answers. He wasn't a master carpenter. He was just a guy who had learned to do this from his father and from experience. And I also know that when he got upset with me or he's correcting me on something I had done wrong, I was willing to listen. I'd talk back sometimes, but I listened. I listened not because my father was some great expert in the field of cutting or sawing anything. I listened because he had invested so much time and effort in teaching me. I listened because I knew that he cared. He cared more about me than he cared about whatever project we were working on. I trusted him. So I'd listen when he'd try to correct me. Jesus, in the gospel today, talks to his disciples about how, as a church, we ought to teach and correct our brothers and sisters. And I think the key word in all of this is brothers and sisters. A sister is someone you know. A brother is someone you have a relationship with. You love your sister, your brother. This isn't, you know, like, it isn't, brothers-in-law or acquaintances that he's talking about. It's someone close to you. He says, brothers and sisters. This is someone you care about, you love, you've spent time with, you've shared experience and memories with, someone who you may have helped on their spiritual journey, someone you may have prayed for and who's prayed for you, someone who shared in your joyous moments and the painful ones and helped you grow spiritually as a disciple of Jesus. That's the person Jesus is trying to teach us how to approach and help when they've hurt you, hurt someone else. Jesus is talking about a church built upon relationships. Relationships that are first and foremost with Christ, but with one another and their mentoring relationships. You know, I knew my dad cared more about me than whatever project we were working on, so I listened. Didn't mean I liked it. Didn't mean I liked it when he'd get upset at something. Didn't mean we didn't argue, but I listened. Because I knew he cared. And I've been corrected by people who I didn't believe cared. You know, I remember at one point nearing the end of my time in the seminary being summoned into someone's office to correct me on an opinion I was voicing. This is not an opinion about doctrine or anything, and without getting into it, it was an issue where I felt there was an injustice having to do with how the diocese was treating seminarians at the time. You know, this isn't an issue of doctrine or something like this. This was a matter of justice that I thought needed to be corrected. But I was called in front of one of the superiors, and I was sitting there being reprimanded by someone who I felt cared way more about getting me to bend to his will than cared about me as a person. Maybe I was wrong. You know, maybe I was wrong about him. Maybe I was wrong about the issue at hand. But I always felt that he never wanted to listen. He just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to cause any disturbance, that I wasn't going to make waves or make problems for other people. And I wasn't impressed. And it didn't change my opinion. It didn't get me to shut my mouth. All he succeeded in doing was getting me to be, you know, more circumvent and try to play all the politics around this and try and, just go behind people's back and things like that. Something I'm really not good at. I'm not good at playing all those diocesan politics games. I mess it up whenever I try. And that's not the church I want to be a part of. And that's not the church that Jesus wants. Jesus wants a church where we have caring relationships, where people feel valued and listened to. Jesus wants a parish where growing as a disciple is something that we all do together. We can't do it anonymously. We can't do it alone. It's too hard. Life is too hard to live alone. We need other people, and we need other people to grow as disciples as well. And I don't know how to do that unless we become a parish where one member comes alongside another to mentor and guide and teach, where we accompany others, not because we're some expert, but because someone has helped us and guided us in the past. Maybe someone taught us to pray or taught us to pray in a different way that opened our eyes to something. And so maybe we're just a step or two ahead on our journey as we accompany someone else and shine a light on what the next step God is calling them to. Jesus doesn't want a church where we accuse people we don't even know, let alone have accompanied or cared for, of not being Catholic enough or, you know, of being sinful or, I don't know, immoral or something like that. That's a church that is full of gossip and slander and even what's called calumny. And the word Catholic, the very word Catholic, means universal. And so division and disparaging others should be antithetical to who we are. And it's most certainly not what Jesus is describing in today's gospel. Jesus is describing how we are to grow in unity and truth and love. But it's through relationships where we care for each other first and foremost, where we help each other grow as disciples, learn how better to follow Jesus, and discover what God is calling us to. And I believe that if that is done with and for people we care about, people we've grown with, people who've helped us, if it's with people we can really call brothers and sisters and actually mean it, then it would be very, very rare when we'd have to come to the point of that final step that Jesus describes in the gospel. That's the church that I want to build. That's the church that I'm committed to building here at St. Ignatius. And that means we have a church full of mentors, because I can't be a mentor to everybody. It can't be something that's just for Father Lou and Father and Deacon Marco and myself to do. If that were the case, there's about 75 people here today. That would be the limit. That's probably the limit of how many people between the three of us that we could have an ongoing relationship of mentoring with. And then who's mentoring us? Because we need it just as much as anyone else. It's the church that has to mentor. We each and every one of us have to be mentored and mentoring. And I know that it's a difficult process. I know that it can't always be done easily and without, you know, without having to change just, you know, what our church looks like in many ways. But it's up to us to build a church where brother or sister isn't some pro forma term. I want people to actually mean it when they say a brother or sister. I want our church to be a place where you don't have to be an expert to want to help and accompany someone on their faith journey. You just have to know what the next step is. And you have to know that the next step or two will bring that sister or brother more joy, more peace, and will help them experience God at work in their lives in a very tangible way. And the only reason you know it is because someone cared enough about you to have helped you discover it yourself. I want to build the church where people know that Jesus has made their lives better and happier and more fulfilling. And they want to share that with others and help one another to grow in their relationship with Him. I want our church to be filled with people who are mentoring and being mentored as disciples, where people aren't projects or numbers or even faceless, even with the masks on, faceless people in the crowd, or just an email account tuning in online. I want our church to be, as St. Paul says today, a place where love of neighbor, you know, it's not some pie in the sky dream, but it's actually lived out, is actually a foundation of how we fulfill the law, where brothers and sisters mean something to us. And I know that there are challenges to doing that, since most of our parishioners are still participating online. To me, that just means that we have to be more innovative and open to trying new ways of coming together and building relationships. But I also know that that is the church that Jesus Christ wants for us. Not from us, but for us. And I know that Jesus doesn't leave us alone. I know that when He says, where two or three are gathered in My name, I am there among them. I know that Jesus meant it when He said it. Now, I don't imagine when Jesus said that 2,000 years ago, He was right there and then thinking that we'd have a church where there are 100 gathered in person and a couple of hundred more watching at home. I don't think He imagined that type of scenario. I don't think Jesus imagined having our Alpha program where people discover who Christ is and what His impact is in their life. I don't imagine he thought of an Alpha program that had 200 people watching from their homes on Zoom. Jesus didn't know what Zoom was. But I do believe that He is there where two or three are gathered in His name. If that's in person, if that's virtual, if that's a hybrid, it doesn't matter. Where two or three are gathered in His name, I believe Jesus is there. Are we going to let Him build our church? Are we going to let Him gather us the way that he wants us to be, as brothers and sisters in him. So we are going to continue to build Jesus's parish, Jesus's church here at St. Ignatius of Loyola, Jesus's church of people who love and care for one another, who love and care for those who are not yet even part of our parish. So the question is there someone here at St. Ignatius who is helping you to grow as a disciple? Is there someone that you are helping along their faith journey? That you maybe even it's just awakening them to the fact that God actually loves them and wants them to be in a relationship with him. If the answer for you is no, that's okay. It's not the end of the world. But why? Is it because you haven't gotten involved? Is it because you're just content to come on Sundays and get the sacraments and go home and then not have it part of your life in any other way? I don't know that that's the church that Jesus wanted for you. I don't know that that's the church that Jesus wants you to be a part of, an integral part of. I don't know that you can then call the people next to you brother and sister and mean it. It starts with relationships, and that means you can't be anonymous. We can't just keep our masks on literally and figuratively. We have to let our guard down, we have to let people in, and we have to let people actually come to know us, to care about us, to help us, and we have to do that for others.